So, without further ado, I would like to welcome Justice, retired Montana Supreme Court Justice Mike Wheat here to moderate our debate. Mike has served our country as a Marine in Vietnam, received the Purple Heart for his service. He has a political science degree and law degrees, both from the University of Montana. We'll forgive that. He served as deputy county attorney in Butte before opening his Bozeman law firm of Koch, Wheat, and Kinsler. We have elected Mike to represent us in the Montana Senate and to serve on the Montana Supreme Court. This last year, Mike retired from the Montana Supreme Court, where he had served as a justice since 2010. Now that he has freed himself from the neutrality of the court, we are delighted that Mike is diving back into the political dialogue. We're lucky. We're the beneficiaries of that. Mike is a friend and an asset to Gallatin County Democrats, and we are grateful for your service to our community and state, for your willingness to leave the warmth of Arizona to join us here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Gallatin County's own Justice Mike Wheat.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. And now we're on to the main event. That's what we're all here for. The procedure is going to be I am going to introduce the candidates. There's only four candidates tonight, but I'm going to introduce them one by one. They submitted their bios, and we haven't made any change to those. And so what I'm reading is what they've submitted. So don't take it out on me, okay? When they come on, they'll come up, they'll sit in these chairs, and then once we've introduced all of them, we'll proceed with our questions. Before they get here, just to give you an idea of how the forum is going to operate, there's going to be three styles of questions tonight. There'll be two rounds of questions where the candidates will have 2 minutes to answer the question. There'll be 2 5-minute rounds of what we call rapid fire questions. These are questions designed to elicit either a yes or no or a one word answer. And the second round of those questions will be written questions from the audience. They'll be handed to me, and I'll read the question just the way it was written by whoever submitted the question. And the final question will be to the candidate's opportunity to close the debate with a 3-minute answer. So with that in mind, let's start with the main event here. The first candidate is Grant Keir. Grant was originally trained as a scientist who worked as a well site geologist on natural gas rigs, and also as an engineering geophysicist evaluating critical infrastructure projects all across North America and Europe. He later went on to start a career in conservation as the executive director of 2 separate Montana land trusts in western Montana. He first worked at the Bitterroot Valley Land Trust, where he was tasked to pass a $10 million open space bond in Ravalli County, one of the most conservative counties in Montana. After working for a year and a half to build a coalition of farmers, ranchers, conservative county commissioners, and environmentalists, Ravalli County passed the open space bond and is still a successful program to this day. After working in the Bitterroot, Keir continued his career at Five Valleys Land Trust in Missoula, where he worked to preserve viable agricultural land, open up access to public lands, and preserve critical wildlife habitat. He also played a key role in crafting the 2014 Farm Bill, making sure it worked for Montana farmers and ranchers. Grant has also worked as a volunteer firefighter, a victims advocate at the domestic abuse shelter, and served as the treasurer of the Missoula Economic Partnership. Grant is a proven bridge builder with experience working across the rural and urban divide and is focused on delivering results for Montana. Let's give Grant Keir a good round of welcome here in Bozeman. Our next candidate is Jared Pettinato. As the only candidate born and raised in Montana, Jared grew up in Whitefish, hiking in Montana's mountains, fishing in Montana's creeks, and swimming in Montana's lakes. Jared learned hard work from his father, grandfather, and great-grandfather. They connected Montana to the United States by keeping the trains running. Jared's father fixed track and served as the secretary for the local union. Jared has earned his mathematics degree from that other school in Missoula. He earned his law degree from Stanford and clerked on the Montana Supreme Court. While there, the court struck down the school funding system and set the table for making Montana businesses non-smoking. Jared served at the United States Department of Justice, where he defended public lands for 9 years. He defended Forest Service projects on the Helena, the Lewis and Clark, the Gallatin, and the Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forests. He defended the Forest Service's ability to drop fire retardant out of airplanes, and he advanced Senator Lee Metcalf's vision in the Montana Wilderness Study Act. Courts now use Jared's interpretation of that act. Separately, the United States trusted Jared with $16 billion of projects throughout the United States that include wind farms, highways, and public rails. He prevailed in about 15 million of them. In one, Jared defended a multi-billion dollar subway in Beverly Hills. The plaintiff spent over $5 million on experts and attorneys. They sent teams from Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York. President Trump's personal lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, formed one of the New York firms. Jared defeated all of them to keep the subway construction moving. In 2017, he defeated a motion that would have cost the taxpayers up to $1.5 billion. Jared has spent 12 years writing a nonfiction book called Beyond Party, currently at 400 pages with 1,700 footnotes. Now we know what Jared does on Saturday night. It describes a balancing test to determine whether, for any particular public policy problem, the political left or the political right solution grows resources for filling citizens' needs. The balancing test turns circular political arguments into linear political arguments. Jared is seeking a publisher. Jared has already served in one U.S. constitutional position. For 2 years on a federal grand jury, he spent Wednesdays and Fridays deciding whether prosecutors established that a target probably committed a crime. Jared is currently running a small business, renting a house, practicing law, and running a nonprofit called Citizens for Constitutional Integrity. Let's give Jared a good round of applause. Next candidate is our very own Kathleen Williams. For over three decades, natural resource policy, conservation, and serving Montana has been Kathleen Williams' calling and her career. While representing Bozeman and Gallatin County in the Montana legislature for 3 years, she served as vice chair of both the Agriculture Committee and the Taxation Committee. She was a lead negotiator on the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Water Compact, advanced the state earned income tax credit, and fought hard for non-discrimination and a woman's right to choose. Kathleen's strong stand on health care issues is rooted in her childhood. Her mother, Marie, was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease when Kathleen was 11. She and her father became Marie's primary caregivers for the next 8 years. Kathleen knows firsthand how a single health problem can change a family. In the legislature, she fought tough battles to expand access to health care. She stood up to insurance companies and required them to cover routine care for cancer patients participating in clinical trials. She was a strong advocate for individuals who were paying too much in the individual market. She voted to expand Medicare to 91,000 Montanans. Kathleen has a record of courage, the type of courage it takes to stand up to special interests and lobbyists and to do what's right for her fellow Montanans. Her career of public service has always been grounded in our hopes, struggles, and dreams. Kathleen enjoys spending time in the open spaces she has worked so hard to protect. When she has free time, you can find her hunting, fishing, skiing, and mountain biking with her dog, Danny, or visiting her stepsons, is it Kaylin? And Sander. To quote Dorothy Bradley, Kathleen is, quote, a former legislator whose dignity to the core and as seriously informed as anyone I know. Let's give a warm welcome to Kathleen Williams. Our final candidate is John Heenan. John has served for more than 15 years as a consumer protection advocate and attorney for clients throughout Montana. He has won hundreds of cases on behalf of people and families who have lost their home to illegal foreclosures, been taken advantage of by payday loan companies, or bullied by big banks and insurance companies. He has represented everyone in this room when he volunteered his time to prosecute politicians who took corporate dark money, including Art Wittich. John's work in these cases is featured in the film Dark Money. John and his wife, Megan, are owners and operators of a restaurant in Billings with 13 employees. John and Megan have four children attending and thriving in Montana's public schools. John's mission is to stand up to corporate bullies and fight for all the people of Montana to protect Medicare, Social Security, public education, and access to public lands and waterways from Greg Gianforte and others seeking to undermine our Montana way of life. Let's give John a warm welcome. Candidates, are you ready to get this show on the road? Actually, we're going to start with the 2-minute questions. And then, so we'll first do 2-minute answer questions, and then we'll go to the rapid fire, and then we'll go to 3-minute questions, and then some more rapid fire, and then you'll close it out. Okay? So this first question, and we'll start with you, Grant. And the way we'll do this is you can start, and then on the next question, Jared will start, and we'll keep rotating that way. So here's the first question. Last week, a 19-year-old killed 17 students and teachers in a Florida high school. Student protesters around the country are asking for change. Grassroots organizations like Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America are effectively fighting the NRA. We need more. We are looking to our leaders to choose action. In Missoula's forum, you did not support expanding background checks. If expanded background checks are not the legislative answer, what specific action will you take in the U.S. House, if you are elected, to solve our gun violence problem?
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for starting with, I think, what's probably foremost on people's minds right now. Obviously, this has been a hard week for all of us, a really important topic for all of us to consider. And I think as Democrats, ones that many of us who are gun owners like me wrestle with. And I did state in that meeting that I was not against expanded background checks. I think the topic of that question was really focused on domestic violence. Look, I'm going to be really honest. I didn't get into this race to take guns away from Montanans who are law-abiding citizens. I got into this race because I think we have somebody running who's not making good decisions. And so I didn't have a lot of background going into this on an issue, and I've certainly done a lot of homework since, including calling some experts in this in Montana. There are really important background checks, changes that we can make immediately. There's no question in my mind that Congress is the body in this nation that is elected to make quick changes and responsive changes. We've got to close background check loopholes, and we've got to have an integrated and fully working system across the country. Examples of those loopholes that we need to close. I think we need to change the background check loophole for gun shows. That's one example. I also think Thank you. I also think we need to make sure that the system works so that when more people are added, it is not a false sense of security. Right now, our Department of Defense, for example, doesn't report crimes that should be in the background check system, and it has no system in place to change that. We can change that. We also have to repeal the Dickey Amendment now. As a scientist, I feel absolutely irate that we don't have enough data and information to make good decisions on one of the most emotional issues that we face as a country in Montana and as people who care about protecting rights and protecting human beings and protecting our kids. Last but not least, we need to break down the stigma around mental health care. This is not about blaming people for being mentally ill. This is about recognizing that in Montana, the issue of gun violence, the issue of gun deaths is primarily around suicides. We've got to work to expand and break down the stigma around mental health care and make sure that there are programs in place for people to deal with issues of dependency.
Thank you. Jared?
The Parkland shootings broke my heart, and watching those kids and watching what they went through just hits me. And we're not doing enough. We need to do more. If that keeps happening, we just need to do more and find some way to cut back on this, on to stop these tragedies, these massacres. We've got a few different avenues we can take. One is, as Grant was talking about, doing studies. Right now, Congress has prohibited the Center for Disease Control from studying gun violence, from figuring out what would be the most effective route to take so that we can figure out a good common sense way of addressing these problems. We need to enforce the laws that we have. We need to pay for the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They don't always have the leadership that they need, and Congress undermines their funding and undermines their efforts to try to do what the laws already allow them to do. So we need to make sure we do that. And then we need to stop pulling back on the gun laws that we have. Last year, Congress withdrew regulation that would have stopped people with substantial mental handicaps from obtaining guns. And so that's going in the wrong direction. When it comes down to this for me, it's about balancing freedoms. The freedom to own a gun, the freedom to hunt, and the freedom to live on the land. My grandfather fed his family with hunting up in Whitefish. So it's impersonal to me. So we need to balance those freedoms with the freedom for school children to be able to go to school and not fear somebody coming in and attacking them, and teachers. And these are our children. So we need to find a good, solid, sensible balance. And I think I've given you three ideas. I'm open to more. I'm looking at this, and I hope we can do more together. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
Every child deserves to feel safe in school. And every parent deserves to have their child come home from school safe. I am a sportsman. I'm a gun owner. My family, we have multiple rifles and shotguns. We have never felt the need to have an AR-15. These are appropriately named assault weapons. They're not for self-defense. And four courts have declined to say that the Second Amendment covers assault weapons. Thank you. We need to increase our restrictions on assault weapons so that they can only be used in controlled environments, just like machine guns are at this point. We need to ban bump stocks. We need to ensure that the NICS system works and that states are reporting to it. We do need to expand mental health and remove the stigma, but we don't want to blame all of this on mental health. So again, I'm a sportsman. I support sportswomen, actually. I support the Second Amendment. I support a strong new generation of sportsmen and women in Montana. Our hunter education system is incredible. We need a new generation of sportsmen and hunters. And my family has participated in youth hunter programs. And we definitely have a sportsman's culture here in Montana. And me as a gun owner, as a woman, as a Montanan, I hope to be a strong voice in Congress, and I'm not afraid to stand up to the NRA.
Thank you, Kathleen. John?
So as Justice Wheat mentioned, I have four children in public school. My oldest, Molly, attends West High there in Billings, and somebody pulled a fire alarm last week right after the Parkland shooting, which is what happened there in Parkland. And my daughter said, "Dad, you need to understand that my entire life of going to school, my entire life has been under the threat of gun violence. And when that fire alarm got pulled, I thought, we're the next ones to be under attack. And so did my fellow classmates. How long ago was Las Vegas? And we still can't ban bump stocks. And we have a president that tells us, wait, he's got a solution. We're going to arm up teachers. Are you serious? Are you serious? Well, why can't anything get done? How come common sense can't go to Washington, D.C.? I'll tell you why. Because Washington is broken. It's corrupt. It's run by lobbyists and wealthy donors and corporate special interests. And that includes the NRA. And so we have a representative now that after Las Vegas, he didn't even like the others say thoughts and prayers. And he certainly won't make any decision that comes to common sense with respect to safety of our children unless the NRA gives him a pass, because he's taken $345,000 from them. He's a top five all-time recipient of NRA money. So to me, what Montanans deserve is someone that's going to go represent them, not the NRA, not the gun lobbyists. And so I won't take a dollar of NRA money. I will not, thank you. I will not fill out their questionnaire. I will not take any money from corporate PACs or corporate lobbyists, because it's important to me that we all deserve, my children deserve, your children deserve, somebody that's going to go to Washington, D.C. and not have the strings attached that our representative has now, and be able to sit down and say, let's talk about common sense. And so I've set forth things that I think are common sense. Banning bump stocks, that's just so easy. Closing loopholes that, you know, they're cheats, right? They're cheats around the system. So the gun show loophole, let's close it. And let's get rid of politicians that are unwilling to come to the table. As your representative, I will come to the table. Everything's on the table. Let's do the studies. Let's find out. But in the meantime, let's protect our children. And let's find common sense solutions. And I mean, there's all kinds of common sense solutions. We just need representatives that are willing to go work for us and do it. And I promise you, if you give me the honor of representing you, that's all I'll do all day long, is represent you, not lobbyists. Thank you.
Thank you, John. I want to remind the candidates that we have time limits here, and so you have to pay attention to those now so that nobody is cheating anybody else on the time issue. All right, the next question here is, and we're going to start with Jared. The world's richest 1% has seen their share of the world's wealth grow from 42.5% in 2008 to over 50% in 2017. What two steps can the U.S. House take to address income inequality and wealth disparity in the United States?
Raise minimum wage and expand unions. The number of unions in America has gone from about 40% in the 60s to about 6.5% today. That's it just makes my heart bleed. We've got to, people today don't have enough money. We just don't have enough money. We're squeezed in every direction. We're squeezed by healthcare. We're squeezed by childcare. We're squeezed by increasing costs that in every direction, and our wages are just not keeping up. And there are only a few ways to do that. You can do it with increasing the minimum wage, unions, and trying to increase demand for jobs. And we need to do all of those things. We need to expand the minimum, we need to get people better jobs, get people jobs that allow them to compete against corporations. Because right now, corporations already have a collective for the shareholders. It's called the corporation. And so the workers deserve a collective as well to negotiate on their behalf. Until we get to that point, the corporations can divide and conquer the workers. Everybody who works will compete against each other for the lowest possible wage. And that's what we see happening. So until we can get the workers together and until we can increase minimum wage, we're going to see inequality continue to increase. Because when it comes down to it, workers only have one thing. They have their time. And it's a different system that we live in when we're trading our time. So that's how I want to do it. That's how we can increase, we can decrease inequality and bring America into the future. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
Thank you. We watched that tax bill go through with no hearings, 1,000 pages. Not sure anyone knew what was all in it. I think one thing we need to do is reverse those tax cuts on the wealthy. One corporation just made $29 billion out of that tax cut policy. That's not helping Montanans. That's not helping America. That's increasing income disparity. The second thing is to fix our healthcare system. The group that's falling into poverty the fastest is those over 65. So we need to ensure that those safety nets, Social Security, Medicare are strong. And the reason they're falling into poverty is healthcare costs. So we are seeing income disparity increasing. When I was vice chair of the taxation committee at the Montana legislature, one thing I was especially proud of is reactivating the earned income tax credit proposal, which did pass in this 2017 legislature. We started it again in 2015. That's a great program. So I was proud to be part of that. I will work hard for the fact that as a vice chair of the taxation committee, I was one of the first people to stand up on the House floor and talk about income disparity, growing income disparity in Montana. And we worked on tax policy that would address that, working on the taxes that were most regressive rather than progressive. And I think we need to send someone to Congress that has that background, that can hit the ground running on incomes, on tax policy, and on how to improve it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. John?
Yeah, we go back to, we've got a broken Washington. We've got a Congress that doesn't represent us. We've got a Congress and a congressman that represents a champion, right? He's a champion of billionaires, of corporations, of lobbyists. They all have a champion in Greg Gianforte. What Montana needs is somebody that's going to be a champion for everybody else. And so what's the biggest problem? Those are all problems. Unions, which I support the hell out of unions. I support a living wage. I believe as I travel the state, people don't want handouts. They want to be paid fairly. They want to be paid enough to put food on the table and provide for their families. And they're not getting that because we're subsidizing corporations that are underpaying their employees. But the root of all that, is Citizens United. It's a system where it's pay to play. And our representatives aren't representing us. They're making decisions based on what their wealthy donors tell them to do. And so overturning Citizens United is the thing that's going to break free and allow our representatives to actually do what we send them to Washington to do, which is to represent us, not them. So how do we fix it? We don't elect people that are taking corporate PAC money. Our representative pledged he wouldn't take corporate PAC money. He's taken $53,000 of corporate PAC money since I got into this race. We don't elect people that are going to take money from healthcare executives, tobacco lobbyists, people that write checks with expectations, because then they have strings attached. We deserve representatives that won't have strings attached. And when we elect people like that, then they can go do the job that we send them there to do, which is to represent us. And then they can pass great laws like Medicare for All and a living wage and fund public education, all the things that would make our society and our country and our economy work again.
Thank you, John. All right, our next question, Grant.
Thank you. So why did I just initiate the applause for my own opponent in the room? Because I couldn't agree more on the issue of Citizens United. It is the root of so many of the problems that we will talk about tonight. And I think we need people elected to office who understand everyday Montanan issues, who don't come from exorbitant wealth, who have understood the struggles of everyday people. And I think that we do not have that in the person representing us right now. And I think until we change the way that our elections are funded, we will not see people in Congress across our country who represent the real people who are struggling every day and the people for whom all of our policies must work. I also think that our labor unions are under attack. We have got to protect the right of people to organize. It's absolutely essential. You know, so many of the issues, we're talking about assault weapons tonight. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about sexual assault in the workplace. Right? We need champions for workers in the workplace, especially in our biggest corporations. And it's essential that we give people an opportunity and a right to organize so that they have somebody advocating on their behalf for wages, for a safe and healthy workplace, and making sure that people have those opportunities when they come into work to work a hard day, leave with a fair paycheck, and when they go home at night, be able to take care of their families. Those are two things that Congress can do right now.
Thank you, Grant. Our next question then, Kathleen, you will get to start off. President Eisenhower warned against the military-industrial complex. But in 2017, the United States has 200,000 troops in 177 countries, and the annual defense spending exceeded that of the next seven countries combined. How will you balance defense spending with our domestic spending needs, such as Social Security and Medicare, while also considering the deficit?
So I'm the daughter of a World War II veteran, the wife of a Vietnam-era veteran. My husband went to Iraq in 2009 for 17 months to help them rebuild their agricultural sector. Same time I went to the legislature, and we would Skype every Wednesday night at 8:30 and talk about our shared experiences trying to solve problems, one in the Middle East and one in Helena. So one of my campaign priorities that has been a priority from the start is our place in the world, rebuilding our place in the world. It's been amazing watching a year of this administration and how they have decimated some of both our ability to feel safe from foreign powers and the stability of the world. And we need to reverse that. We need Congress needs to reassert its role in foreign policy. They have abdicated that, and it needs to change. As far as the budget goes, I was on the road during the budget considerations where the defense spending increases. I didn't hear any justification for those. So We can't just increase defense budget because it seems patriotic. We need to, and we can't do it just because someone wants a new aircraft carrier built in their district. So we need to scrutinize our defense spending. We need to ensure that it's going to build safety in the world and safety at home, and that it treats our military personnel fairly and equitably. And what really is going to save defense spending is peace.
Thank you, Kathleen. John?
Yeah, beware the military-industrial complex. And you know, we just come back to, hey, how come we're spending all these billions and billions and billions of dollars overseas on military spending while we watch our roads and our schools and our infrastructure crumble? How come we're not investing in our future in our country? And again, it's because we have representatives that aren't representing us. They're representing lobbyists and corporate special interests and corporations that can write big checks. And if you want to know about and look at corporations that can write big checks to buy Washington, D.C. and buy representatives, look no further than the military-industrial complex. They've got a stranglehold on Washington, D.C. Politicians on both parties take the contributions, and they always vote to increase defense spending. And of course, you know, that's important. We need to have a strong security, obviously, but money is literally getting flushed down the toilets while these guys line their pockets. And that needs to stop. We need, again, people that are willing to go with no strings attached, not take that dirty corporate money so that they can make just good common sense decisions. And I'll tell you the worst thing, our government says, you know, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. But what do they do with veterans? As I travel the state and I talk to veterans, I hear horror stories about the inability to get access to health care, just this absolute not being treated the way that they deserve to be treated. And so we deserve representatives that will reprioritize and honor our veterans, that were willing to serve and fight for us and defend us, and prioritize making, you know, America work the way it has by investing in our future, investing in our infrastructure here.
Thank you, John. Grant?
So before I started this campaign, I sat down and talked to a lot of the folks who have influenced me in my life, especially in Montana. And I was sitting down talking to an old rancher, Republican, really proud of his son being in the military, a patriot, and absolutely committed to being fiscally conservative. And he said to me, "You've got to work on military spending." His son is an engineer. In his work as an engineer, he identified a part on a helicopter for the Army, or whatever service branch, and went to his superiors and said, "We could save $1 million per helicopter if we just change the way we design this part." And the response was, "You know what? That's a rounding error. There's no excuse for a rounding error. We can make our country safe and not waste vast amounts of money doing it." I think one of the things we have to do is recognize that the Department of State is where we need to be investing. We talked about peace. Diplomacy is what will save us money in the end on military spending. I think in Congress we should try to tie any increases in military spending to commensurate increases in the State Department so that we know we will have a stronger diplomatic corps, we will build stronger relationships, we will understand issues in communities, and we will avoid getting into wars. We will avoid getting into situations that require more funding for the military. That's how we do things in Montana. Right? When we don't agree with someone, we go over and we sit down and we talk to them and we figure it out. That's the way the world works. If you've traveled around the world, you know that people want to sit down and understand each other. Our diplomatic corps has been incredible since the Second World War. It's the place that we are seeing drastic cuts. We are seeing philosophical changes where we are at an absolute crisis point if we don't turn our country around and reinvest in the State Department and make sure that we are building the relationships that save us money over time.
Thank you, Grant. Jared?
Montanans volunteer for the military more than people in any other state. We know our duty to the United States. We know our duty to contribute our time and our resources and our lives. And I support our troops in what they do. But we're sending them on missions that we're not so sure are the right ones anymore. Congress right now, well, the administration right now, is running these wars around the world based on authorizations that Congress gave them in 2001, in 2002, to fight terrorists, to respond to September 11th. And we're still fighting wars based upon those. Congress has not revisited those authorizations, and the administration has used them to expand their mission. Mission creep has expanded into Syria. It's expanded across Iraq. And it's expanded into Nigeria. I don't think there's one congressperson or senator who voted for those defense authorizations back in 2001 and 2002 that thought, oh, of course we're going to use these and then go to Nigeria. That's not how they designed it. So Congress has abdicated its responsibility to oversee our military and to oversee where our troops are going, because our troops go where we send them, and I appreciate them doing that, but we got to make sure that we figure out where to send them and that Congress gets involved in that and that we make a good decision. And then we can make our military more efficient. We can make the Department of Defense more efficient. They've never had an audit from an external source that has looked for ways to make it more efficient. They just had one a couple of years ago that just started and just scratched the surface, and they could save $100 billion. What could we do with $100 billion? How much health care could we have? What kind of bridges could we build? So we've got places to squeeze efficiency. We've got to make sure that we are targeting on the right thing, and we've got to make sure that we protect and honor our troops. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared.